Okay, we're going to be on in a short, in a few minutes with Tom Adams. We're going to start in, I think we're ready for John 8:12, and Tom's going to be kind of leading it tonight. I've been kind of under the weather with this unbelievable cold that doesn't want to go away, so I may make a few remarks, but I'm going to kind of let Tom lead the Bible study tonight. We'll be with you shortly. Well, thank you, Tom. Tom Adams is with me tonight. It's Sunday evening, and I'm really going to kind of let Tom lead this Bible study. As many of you know, I've kind of been under the weather, and you can probably tell it by my voice. And so I'm not going to push myself tonight, but I appreciate Tom's willingness to really kind of take the reins tonight. I'll make comments if I feel like it's important enough for me to do it. But other than that, I'm gonna kind of hide in the corner tonight. So Tom, welcome aboard, and thanks for continuing to do the Bible study tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to get through verses 12 through 18 of John chapter 8, and it says, "Then spake Jesus again unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. The Pharisees therefore said, Thou bearest record of thyself, thy record is not true. Jesus answered and said unto them, Though I bear record of myself, yet my record is true. For I know whence I came and whither I go, but ye cannot tell whence I come and whither I go. Ye judge after the flesh, I judge no man. And yet if I judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I and the Father that sent me. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am one that bear witness of myself, and the Father that sent me beareth witness of me." Verse 12 starts off, Then spake Jesus again unto them, saying, "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." I was reading this, and my first question was, who is the them in the first part of this verse? It says, Then spake Jesus again unto them. So who is the them referring to? I personally believe it is the group of all the people came unto him, mentioned in verse 2. Jesus was in the middle of teaching this group when he was so rudely interrupted by the scribes and Pharisees. So I think that he has gone back to them and started teaching them again. Can I prove that? I don't think so, but I think that fits with how it's worded. Jesus clearly and boldly proclaims, "I am the light of the world." What a glorious and reassuring statement. But this isn't the first time he has made this proclamation. There are two previous times as recorded in the Gospel of John, and one recorded later. And if I may, let me read them. The first one is John 1, verses 4 through 9. "In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world." John 3, verse 19. "And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil." And then chapter 9, verse 5, which, Lord willing, we will get to and hopefully delve into a lot better. "But as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And these verses, after I read them, immediately made me think of a verse in the book of Psalms. And that is Psalms 119, verse 105. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. And to me, this verse is a reference to Jesus, him being the living word. Along with this verse from Psalms, Luke records a similar statement. In chapter 1, verses 78 and 79, it says, through the tender mercy of our God, whereby the day spring from on high hath visited us, to give light to them that sit in darkness, and in the shadow of death to guide our feet into the way of peace. Notice here it does not say that the whole area is lit up, but it specifically says it is unto the feet and the path. We, by God's grace, only see as far ahead as he has lighted, and most of the time it is just the very next step that he has lighted for us to see. How many times have, if you think about it, how many times you've been in complete darkness? You can't even see your fingers right before your eyes. This is what I take verse 79 to mean with them that are, that sit in darkness. In so complete darkness, even the light unto the feet will bring peace and comfort. This light, though, does not resonate in the world as a whole. It shines forth to those whom followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Is this speaking of works? Absolutely not. In John chapter 10, Jesus says this, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. The following is a fruit of life. We follow the shepherd. The sheep or believers are already sheep, and Jesus refers to them in the possessive. He calls them my sheep, and only his sheep hear his voice and follow. Thus, those that follow by default are his sheep, and therefore will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Verse 13, the Pharisees therefore said unto him, thou bearest record of thyself, thy record is not true. So, with this verse, if you think about it, where did the Pharisees come from? What I mean by that is, from how it's recorded, it appears to be taking place immediately after Jesus convicts the scribes and Pharisees with his one statement, he that is without sin, let him first cast a stone at her. They were all so convicted of their sin that one by one they departed. They left. So all the Pharisees were gone. So where did the Pharisees come from? Possibly, I can think of two things. They could have realized he was now teaching again, so they came back. Or there was another group of Pharisees still hanging around watching him to try to accuse, to catch something that he might say to accuse him by. Either way, they were there and brought this accusation against Jesus. The only verse I can think of that somewhat fits in their accusation is found in the book of Proverbs, at least that I could find. And it is Proverbs 27, verse 2. Let another man praise thee, and not thine own mouth, a stranger, and not thine own lips. Now, I read this and I was thinking about people and our nature. And, you know, have you ever been in the company of someone who can't stop talking about himself or herself? Quite frankly, it's nauseating to hear. A while ago, I saw an old acquaintance, and we started conversing. Well, let me rephrase that. They started conversing and telling me how they had quit their job and was starting a new one and boasting about how good it's going to be. They couldn't stop pouring out personal accolades on themselves. During this time, they're expounding on their greatness, and I'm just thinking how pathetic they sound because no one is that good.
Right.
It doesn't even have to be, you know, and if you think about it, it doesn't even have to be as drastic as that. How many times are we listening on some conversation at a restaurant. You know, we're not trying to eavesdrop, but they're talking so loud, or they're talking right next to us, or they're in a line somewhere, you know, right next to us, and two people are talking. A topic will be brought up, and one of them, if not both, will start tooting their own horn about what they know or what they do in regards to that topic.
That's really interesting. I heard a Christian comedian, and he did a stand-up comedy, and it was entitled "I Walked on the Moon," and it was really funny because he was at this dinner party, and no one knew him there. And he said there was a guy at the dinner party that anything anybody said, this guy topped it. He had a better story. He said he sat there and the whole time listened to the guy, and everybody else had tried to say their part, and this guy now had come to the end, and now he was at the top of the top. Mm-hmm. And he said the guy looked over at me and says, "Well, you haven't said anything. What do you have to say about yourself?" He said, "I walked on the moon." You know, I totally agree with you. You know, even as it relates to relationships, as it relates to reciprocity, mm-hmm. you know, some people just don't know when to shut up. You know?
Nope. They gotta keep that going.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so hard to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to think of another example, and I've heard similar, but the example I came up with are like two people might be discussing the Bible. You know, when one of them pipes up and proudly proclaims that they get up real early in the morning for their study and prayer time. Mm. You know, this is not invited. This is just
right. They're
talking about scripture, and then oh yeah, remember my prayer time that I get up every day and so forth. You know, so the other one has to go to up them one and proclaims that they do the same, but yet they teach a Bible study and listen. You know, and you know, it's like with this example. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against studying
the Bible. Right.
And in fact, you know, I implore everyone of God's children to study. But what I am against is the boasting about it.
Right.
You know, when I study and how much I study is between me and the Lord.
Yeah.
If someone were to ask me, though, then I would share, you know, just because it's a question, but it's not to be proclaimed like some trophy.
Right. Well, you know, it's like I recently heard about a man who was a contractor, and this fellow met him in a grocery store, and the guy was talking about his business and everything that he did in his business, and this happened to be a pastor of a church, and he said, "Well, you know, our church is getting ready to go through a big rehab. We'd like to get a price from you." And so the guy came down and gave him a price and everything. And this guy said, "Oh, by the way, I also teach Sunday school class," you know. And so the pastor, you know, he thought, well, he's probably a good Christian and everything. So they went ahead and took this and signed a contract with him. And it was like pulling nails to get him to do any work.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he was they kept calling him and calling him, and he'd come and he'd do just little bits of work and come back. And finally, they had to try to find someone else to finish the job.
Yeah, that's okay.
And so they sent this guy, when he found out they'd got someone else, he sent him a bill three times of what he had contracted for, because they reneged on his contract, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this guy, this pastor was just saying, you know, here this guy was very well known throughout the community as, you know, teaching a very large Sunday school class. But he said his life and witness just didn't measure up, you know?
No, right.
So.
Yep. Getting back to our verse in John, and I apologize for my little tangent, but.
Oh, I kind of got to get on too. Don't feel like you're alone.
But, you know, if Jesus was not who he claimed to be, these Pharisees had every right to say what they said, and
sure. They
were pretty bold in their statement. You know, while listening to my old acquaintance that I I ran into. I never dreamed of saying anything like this to them. And yet, they had it coming to them, where Jesus did not. And to me, the difference is, Jesus was who he said he was.
Right.
Jesus knew exactly who he was, but yet these Pharisees had no idea who he was and is. Because if they did, they would have eyes to see and ears to hear, and they would have welcomed his proclamation as truth and gloried in them.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and what do they do? No, they accuse him. You're what you say is not true because it's, you're saying it. You know, thy record is not true because it's coming from you. And on another note, with this verse, I find it extremely ironic, the inconsistencies of the leaders. And it's inconsistencies of our flesh, period, but especially these leaders. You know, back in the first chapter of the Gospel of John, we read of an account where John the Baptist was asked a question by the priests and Levites. And it's verses 19 through 23, and it says, "And this is the record of John, when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, 'Who art thou?' And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, 'I am not the Christ.' And they asked him, 'What then? Art thou Elias?' And he saith, 'I am not.' 'Art thou that prophet?' And he answered, 'No.' Then said they unto him, 'Who art thou? That we may give an answer to them that sent us. What sayest thou of thyself?' He said, 'I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord, as said the prophet Isaiah. They had no problem with him answering who he was. But when Jesus proclaims who he is, they take issue with it. And again, I can only, obviously it was decreed that they take issue of it, but they took issue with it because they were not given to see the truth of who he was and is. And going on, this is exactly what Jesus tells them in the next three verses, which says, Jesus answered and said unto them, 'Though I bear record of myself, yet my record is true, for I know whence I came and whither I go. But ye cannot tell whence I come and whither I go. Ye judge after the flesh, I judge no man. And yet if I judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I and the Father that sent me.'" Jesus does not skirt the issue here. He answers them directly with saying, "Yes, I bear record of myself, because my record is true." Why is it true? He continues, "For I know whence I came and whither I go." Here he again is proclaiming that he is not of this world. He is not. Now, to me, I see this as he is not speaking as the Son of Man here, but he is speaking as the Son of God. We see the difference between these verses and what he said as recorded back in chapter 5, where I believe he was speaking as the Son of Man, which is chapter 5, verses 30 through 31. "I can of mine own self do nothing; as I hear, I judge. And my judgment is just, because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which has sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true." Jesus is saying here that these Pharisees have no clue whatsoever he truly is. They have no clue from where he came, nor where he is going, and how he is to get there. But he knows fully. He then tells them, "Ye judge after the flesh. I judge no man." They, because they do not have eyes to see, judge according to the outward appearance, or better known as the flesh. And if we continue that thought, then the next statement makes more sense, at least to me. "I judge no man after the flesh." God looks to the inward man because this outward man, i.e. the flesh, is decaying as we speak and is as filthy as can be imagined, and probably even filthier than can be imagined. This is why he says what he says next. "And yet if I judge, my judgment is true. For I am not alone, but I and the Father that sent me." His judgment is true. Jesus ends his train of thought with these next two verses. 17 and 18 says, "It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am one that bear witness of myself, and the Father that sent me beareth witness of me. I'm thinking that this is the verse that Jesus was speaking of in verse 17. And this is Deuteronomy 19. It's the testimony of two men is true. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or any sin. In any sin that he sinneth, at the mouth of two witnesses, at the mouth of three witnesses, shall the matter be established. Now, I could be mistaken. There's no, it doesn't say where it was taken from, but it's, I take it that that very well could be where he, what he was speaking of about the testimony of two men is true. And then he says, I am one to bear witness of myself, and the Father that sent me beareth witness of me. So here we have two witnesses that cannot be questioned or doubted.
Yeah, and also, you know, this is a reoccurring theme throughout the throughout the Gospels about Christ and the two witnesses. In the 14th chapter of John, just briefly here, he's, you know, they're asking him to explain more about himself and so on. And he says in verse 7, if ye had known me, you should have known my Father also. And from henceforth ye know him, and I have seen him. And we know what Philip said. And then he went on and he says in verse 10, believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me? I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Believe me. And so you're absolutely right. It's like a validation of two witnesses, himself and his Father, you know.
Yes. So. Yes. Well, that's all I've got.
Well, that's very good. That was very edifying. And, you know, I think today there's not a lot of instruction about the relationship between the Father and the Son. You hear a lot of things taught about Christ and the Son, but you don't hear a lot taught about the Father, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Christ said over and over, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. They said, show us the Father, you know.
Right, yes.
And this is a really good a good lesson. I appreciate it, and appreciate you picking up the reins tonight. So.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and Lord willing, it was a glory to God.
It was. So look forward to next week, and have a good week, brother.
Thank you. You as well.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.